Okay, here we are. I'm talking to my friend, what's become my best friend, even though we've never physically met, Mr. Will Snyder, who has become not only a very close friend of mine, but I value so much our friendship that he became not only my personal attorney as far as the entertainment aspect of Radio First Termer and the Dave Rabbit experience goes. But, additionally, he's also taking the position as my agent and has done a masterful job, even though the couple of people that were interested, we decided that we didn't want to jump on board with them. But that's another story. So everybody, give me a warm round of applause out there in the worldwide web of internet for Mr. Will Snyder. Hello, Will. What's going on, brother?
Good evening, Dave.
You doing all
right? How's it going?
You doing all right, man?
I'm doing fine.
Well,
you're doing okay this evening.
Well, I mean, of course, nobody knows, and we're not going to give real names. They know your sure. real name. But, you know, you have a beautiful wife, and you just have a brand-new daughter that's not very old. So you're getting a bit of experience now finding out what it really means to be an attorney with a young daughter, right?
This is very true. This is very true. My wife and I had a daughter whom we named Rebecca, going on a year ago. She will be 1 year old on December the 2nd, so I hope everyone will help me in wishing my 1-year-old daughter happy birthday.
Oh, well, we'll have to do that. We'll definitely have to do that. And what's really funny is, of course, what people don't know is that I am the official god rabbit of Rebecca. And
yes.
Yes, and she's just absolutely gorgeous. She needs to get a little bit more of her typing skills in line, but other than that, you know, she's done a masterful job.
Yeah, she tried to write an email to you the other night, as you saw when I sent you that video.
Yeah, she was doing a great job. Okay, here we go. This is what people want to know, Will. And you and I have talked about this, but, you know, as everybody knows, February 2006, I'm getting on the Internet for really the first time that I'm really Googling anything, because I've never Googled anything in my life. And I'm looking in the Vietnam websites, and I come across a couple of things that say Radio First Termer, and I'm thinking, what the hell is this about? I click onto it, and I find the website of one William Snyder. And the website is really about Dave Rabbit and Radio First Termer. And I was completely blown away by this. So after thinking about what the consequences would be about contacting anybody and leaving myself vulnerable, I decided to belly up to the bar, as they say. And I contacted Will, and we exchanged emails at first, and then I gave him a phone number, and then we talked. And then Will, of course, verified who I was and what I was and knew that I was the legitimate real thing.
Yes, and only Dave could do the Captain Pansy voice.
there's not very many people that can actually do that. And so anyway, that's kind of how Will's and my relationship started. And he has told me these stories, you know, for the last several months about how everything transpired. And you know, with all the interviews we've ever done, and of course I've mentioned Will numerous times in every interview as being what I feel, and I believe history will bear me out. Will was the absolute number one person in the world that was most responsible for making Radio First Termer the legend that it's become worldwide, and of course Dave Rabbit, they kind of go together. And before that time, there were a few of these hucksters that were selling copied tapes of the original Radio First Termer show, but there was never anything available at the time that was available, which Will made available for free as a download, simply because of his allegiance, if you will, to Dave Rabbit and Radio First Termer. So Will, tell me, and I know, so play like you know that I don't know. Tell me what was the first time, or when, you know, how old you were, where you were, what the circumstances were when you first heard the old Radio First Termer show, and what it did, what it, you know, caused you to think about, or got you turned on to it, or whatever.
Sure, Dave. Well, it goes back to my senior year in high school. I went to a high school called Cape Fear Academy in Wilmington, North Carolina. And I was helping one of the teachers, Mrs. Bryan, with a she had asked me to help her put together, as part of an independent study project, a tape of songs from the Vietnam War. I unfortunately didn't have access myself to a number of many of the songs that I think would have been appropriate to put on there, not without engaging in a large investment myself. So I contacted some of my classmates, as did Mrs. Bryan, to try to see what folks had in their own personal libraries. And a classmate of mine by the name of Parrish Warren happened to have a copy of what was became my first experience with Radio First Tremor.
What year was that, Will?
That was in 1988.
Okay.
It was that would have been the spring of 1988, and
that we're talking about what almost 20 years.
Yeah, almost 20 years ago, and I was really just absolutely blown away by it because of the unabashed defiance of, you know, I don't give a shit attitude of the program, and the fact that we're doing it on the air, complete defiance of the military. But it was defiance, but not outright, you know, rejection of the military. It was like poking fun at the military, but without actually seeding the kind of discontent to generate an over revolt. It's sort of like making fun of the boss, sort of thing. In your case, the base commander. In later years, I've commented to folks, you know, in its own way, Radio First Tremor is a very patriotic program. You know, going back to, I remember one of the my favorite quotes from the Iran-Contra hearings in 1987, which were still very fresh in my mind at that time, is that in America, disagreement with the policies of the government is not evidence of lack of patriotism. That's a quote from a Senator, I think it was George Mitchell of Maine, during the Iran-Contra hearings, that's always stuck with me.
And yeah.
That sort of value system that I found very attractive with Radio First Tremor. Of course, the shock value of it. We all were playing the tape in the senior room, which was sort of our.
Wait.
Sure.
Now you're playing this for your senior class.
Yeah, well, just various persons of my various elements of my senior class. We had it was a tradition at the time at Cape Fear Academy that the seniors had what was originally a closet, but that had been converted over the years to a hangout for the seniors so they could get away from the underclassmen. And we had a stereo in there that had been donated by one of the fathers of my classmates. And I remember we were all playing the tape for one of the girls in our class who was kind of prudish, and she was dating a guy. And actually, that young lady, she lives here in Winston-Salem now. Of course, she's married and has kids and all that, and it's all coincidence. But anyway, I remember the gag about, while I'm home, my wife is my right hand. While I'm away, my right hand is my wife. And we're playing this during your school hours. And this young lady did not immediately understand what was being referred to. And her boyfriend at the time kind of leaned over toward her and said, right, clenched his fist relatively away from, but close enough to his private area to get the point across, in your right hand, and she's like, that's gross. And be able to sit, I just can't really just cackle at the reaction, the absolute shock in this girl's eyes of that actually being spoken, and actually having been spoken on the air, and also here we're playing this, you know, right in the middle of our school. So
I love it.
We ended up, I got some help from another classmate of mine named Laura, who was helpful in selecting certain bits. And actually, I think it may have actually been, you know, Laura who put me on to the fact that Parrish had this tape, as she had selected some bits from it, as part of the contribution to the project of putting together this tape,
What kind of grade did you get?
My history teacher.
What kind of grade did you get?
Say again, I apologize.
I said, what kind of grade did you get for the project?
I think it was more of an independent project. I was, kind of just helping her, as an independent project, and I don't remember if I ever even got a grade for the Ultimate Project. It was sort of like a study hall, an active study hall sort of situation.
Are you sure it wasn't detention?
I'm not sure, honestly. I actually go back and pull my report cards and see if I ever got a grade for that thing.
Will, do you even know what detention is?
Detention? Yeah. Oh, yes. I know what detention is.
So that was my question. It wasn't detention. It was like a real study hall kind of thing, right?
Yeah, it was a real study hall. It was an independent project where I was helping research my history teacher. Now I remember a little bit more about it. She was wanting to put together a class on the Vietnam War, and so she wanted me to spend a semester researching and writing papers about the various phases of the Vietnam War, from the Gulf of Tonkin resolutions, or even before that, the French involvement in Indochina that was supported by the United States, both covertly and overtly, that ultimately led to commission of troops to Vietnam after the Gulf of Tonkin incidents and the Gulf of Tonkin resolutions that Congress adopted, that was sort of the unofficial declaration of war, if you can call it that, or the authorization to engage in military action in Southeast Asia.
Okay, all right. Now let me stop you. Okay, so all right, so that's when. So we're 1988. You're doing this as a kind of a fun project. You find out about the show. Okay, now take the listeners to where you get to a point to where you sit there and go, you know, maybe I want to research this more, and maybe I want to do something on the internet.
Okay, let me fast forward through my college years into my law school years. I got a copy of the tape. I duped the tape and played it all through college for people who I thought might appreciate the humor of the program, and also for girls who were a little too prudish, in my opinion, and needed a little shock in their lives. I remember one girl who lived in my hall, I think it was my junior year, who absolutely hated the P word, you know, pussy. And she'd hear that word and just spin out. And so, among other things, I would play various tracks, like from your program, like the, you know, your pussy is the breakfast of champions, and especially since I lived on a hall at Granville Towers at UNC, I would play the bit where we're going to let this next one roll on through, and barring unforeseen incidences that may occur during my trip to the latrine, such as being picked up for marijuana or stopping in to get a quick fuck with one of the whores down the hall, you know, that kind of shock value sort of thing. So anyway, you know, of course, through the late 80s and early 90s, the internet was still pretty much creature of the, or not even a, I wouldn't say a creature, but the access was pretty well restricted to educational institutions and research institutions, and it wasn't very commercial at all. I didn't even have a personal computer other than my TRS-80 color computer, which I never really used in college, except when I was at home for some word processing. I got my first personal computer, IBM compatible, in 1992, before going off to law school. Eventually got bought a sound card for it, which was an 8-bit Sound Blaster card. And one of the first things I did was to make samples of the bits of your program. I had, you know, occasionally made copies of the tape and gave them to friends who said, "My God, this is great stuff. You know, can I get a copy of this, Will?" And sure, I just pop in a blank tape that they may give me and dupe the tape. Which is, of course, how I got the program to begin with, and how the person before me, you know, Parrish, and I think it was Brian, from whom he got it, that's how the program had propagated. Well, I somewhat discovered the internet my senior year of college, and became very active on Usenet, which is the bulletin, as you know, is sort of the network news service. News groups of every topic imaginable. There was a set of groups for distribution of sound files. People would post clips of, you know, TV shows or movies and stuff like that. And I thought, you know, hey, how about, you know, I've now got these WAV files of Radio First Termer. Why don't I post them to the to Usenet, and so that everybody else can share and can experience Radio First Termer? Because really, the way it had been experienced up until I kind of put up my website for the most part was it was from friend to friend. It would be, you know, hey, I got something really cool that you want to listen, you might want to listen to, and gee, great, this is great. Can I get a copy of it? And that's how the program propagated since 1971. So I posted them to Usenet. Now most of the feedback I got was positive. I did get some negative feedback. The negative feedback was along the lines of, well, these files are too big, and you shouldn't be posting stuff, you know, files like that are this big to Usenet, but most of the feedback was, hey, this is really great stuff. The way network news works, Usenet works, is the messages stay on for a while, but eventually they're purged off. And of course, now you can go to, you know, Google, and as thanks to their efforts to cull through backup tapes, they've been able to put together most of Usenet going back 25, 30 years. I tried to see if those postings still existed, but I could not locate them. So those postings may be lost to the sands of time already. But the very nature of Usenet was that post it, it's on the net for a while, and then it gets purged off when the files over after a period of time. Well, the World Wide Web started coming into its own around 1994. My major recollection of onset of the revolution of the World Wide Web was in 1994 with the Star Trek Generations website, which was the first, I think it was probably the first website to really promote a major motion picture. And I had a friend in the UNC Office of Information Technology by the name of Chris Cullum, who he's a major figure in the Radio First Termer website as well, but later on. But he got me on, started me on the World Wide Web, introduced me to Mosaic and NCSA Mosaic, which was the primary web browser at the time before Netscape Navigator came on the scene. But he made a good friend, and I enjoyed listening to him talk about the various projects that he was working on in his niche. And he eventually became associated with a project at UNC at the time that was called Sunsight. It's now called iBiblio.org, but at the time that I knew Chris, it was sunsight.unc.edu. He was in he had a power position there, and they were trying to build the Sunsight. They had a major grant from Sun Microsystems, and they were trying to put together a variety, or trying to get contributors to put up websites. And he said, well, I can get you some space on Sunsight, but there's only one catch. You've got to put up something of interest to you. And so I ended up working on two different projects. One was a proto version of what eventually became the UNC School of Law website. It was very much unauthorized at the time, and I didn't publicize it, but it was more like I put it together and would then showed it to the law school administration and say, you know, what do you think? You know, you really need to, you know, start thinking about your web presence here, and I'm willing to give all this stuff to you. You know, it's kind of neat, isn't it? But the other project that I worked on and started was the Radio First Termer homepage. I figured the amount of positive feedback I got from the postings of the WAV files to Usenet, I believed, hey, this would be a good addition to the web. The Radio First Termer, at least from my point of view, is a snapshot of the Vietnam counterculture that really did exist during the later stages of the Vietnam War. And this is a great example and manifestation of that counterculture that may have began in parts before the Tet Offensive, but really grew by leaps and bounds after the Tet Offensive. And obviously I wasn't there, and I wasn't steeped in that culture for 22-year-old Dave Rabbit at the time, but I felt that it was a piece of history that was unfiltered and that would give anybody who decided to listen to it a true-to-life taste of what it was like serving in the military in South Vietnam during the later stages of the war. And I thought they were all the material was just as funny as hell, too. I wanted anybody who wanted it to have it. It started as a way to propagate those initial WAVE files. Of course, as I got email feedback over time, you know, of course, I started getting emails from folks saying, hey, this is really great, and, you know, oh, by the way, I've got some tidbits about Radio First Termer that you might be interested in, and all the theory, this conspiracy theories about who Dave Rabbit was and what the inspiration was behind the show or whether it was a hoax. I got all that in emails in the years after I put up that website. And in fact, that website was featured in a publication about Sunsight shortly after I put it up in very positive terms. They were using it to promote their website, and fortunately they weren't deterred by the fact that many of the language, in the very, very strong language, and I suddenly realized that when I was posting it up, and so I put a warning up there that, you know, look, these sound files contain strong language. You know, if you're offended by wordy dirge, you probably ought not to listen to these sound files. That, I think, that was probably sufficient for their sentiments.
Okay, tell me what time, of course I know that, but just tell me, sure, for purpose of interview. It was 1995. Do you remember, what was it, January?
Roughly January is when I first got the space on Sunsight. It began working on both the UNC law, the proto UNC School of Law homepage, and also the Radio First Termer homepage.
Okay. Now, you know, somewhere down the way, okay, once you got it up and everything and you started getting mm-hmm. all these emails, and you sent me, when we first connected, Will, and I'm sure you may remember, you're younger than I am, so you ought to remember, but you sent me some emails that were kind of conjoined in a way. It took me a while to decipher them. But it was emails from really people all over the world, and there were people, there were several in there that were just really striking to me, talking about that they remembered the show and blah, 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 this and that. And there was one in there from a guy that had been injured in the hospital somewhere, and that, you know, he was talking about how it lifted his spirits. And, you know, it was just really amazing, you know, all those years that went on from 1995 to 2006 when you and I first connected, if you will, of the interest. I mean, there were literally thousands of people that went to the site over that period of time, which we're talking about 11 years, that went there and downloaded the files and whatever. And, of course, then they propagated the files and on and on and on. And then when you couple those with original tape that was copied, you know, thousands and thousands of times, I mean, it just became a really phenomenal thing, especially that they could go on the Internet and download it for free, cost them nothing, as opposed to, you know, some of the people that started trying to huckster, you know, selling it for 14 or 15 bucks and that kind of stuff. Okay, so, all right, that's 1995. And, okay, then how far after when you really did that did you do the Freedom of Information things with the government trying to track me down or find more material?
Sure, sure. That would have, that was in approximately 1996. I had gotten an email from somebody who had never heard the show before, but had served in Vietnam, and he said, you ought to consider doing a Freedom of Information Act request, because anything like this would have been taped and sent up the chain of command. And, of course, you know that's what happened. But he was assuming that, well, if it was taped and sent up the chain of command, that there would be a permanent record of it somewhere in some military warehouse.
Exactly.
I researched into making Freedom of Information Act request. I was somewhat familiar with it from law school and just osmosis over the years and researched it. I did know that there were likely to be some costs associated with being the request, and so I really fretted about whether to make it. I didn't want to get a bill for $1,000 for research, particularly if it didn't result in any hits in information, like any additional recordings or documents.
Right. And
I thought about, you know, do I want to put up a request for donations to fund the FOIA request? And I decided, no, I really just don't want to get into that. I've, you know, this is my hobby, and I want this to be you know, something available for free to everybody, because I got it for free and everybody else should get it for free. And just as an aside, I did get emails over the years saying, hey, can I get copies of your tape that you have? And I'm like, sure, send me a blank cassette with a self-addressed stamped envelope and I'll dupe my copy of the program onto your tape and return it. Of course, as you know, in later years, once I got a better sound card and a CD-ROM burner that I produced, that the Radio First Termer Multimedia CD that I didn't publicize, if I got a request for copies of my tape, I said, well, I don't make copies of my tapes anymore, but I'll make you a copy of my multimedia CD. Just send me a blank CDR and I'll burn you a copy of it and return it to you in your SASC.
Okay, now I got a question. Since you brought it up in your conversation there, did you, the first tape that you got, was it cassette or reel to reel? Do you remember?
It was a cassette tape. It sounded like it had been duped from a reel to reel because of the way that the program was cut, but the fact that it's very possible that whomever made that original recording made it on reel to reel tape and was able to get the whole 3-hour program in one fell swoop on one reel-to-reel tape. But of course, with the mass-produced cassettes being 60, 90 minutes, or in this case 90-minute cassettes, it obviously had to be spliced up in order to be transferred onto cassettes.
Yeah, because
my copy was on a cassette tape.
Yeah, because you know the one I had in 82, that, you know, when I met that guy and whatever, I mean, the tape that he gave me was a copy of a cassette that he had. And of course, as you say, you know, it's chopped up on the ends. And of course, you and I have managed over many months to be able to kind of put it together to where it's in a little bit more pristine condition than you first had. Still, that said, you know, we were still working on basically a cassette tape mentality that it was propagated from.
Yeah, that's basically right. It's been pretty much propagated by cassette tape copies and then made by whomever happened to have a dubbing deck. But one thing is for certain, and that is every time that a copy of Radio First Termer was made by cassette, a little bit of it was lost in terms of the quality.
Oh, of course.
Because it had been duped and duped and duped and duped and duped. And one of the benefits of sampling it and digitizing it to MPEG, I chose the MPEG-2 format for a number of reasons that we've discussed in the past, but once it's been sampled, it freezes it. It's not going to degrade anymore.
Exactly.
It can be preserved for all time.
Right.
Because of the advent of digital recording, and it can be stored in a compact format that can be easily distributed much more easily these days with broadband and internet connections. But we're still talking, at the time I made those MP2 samples and produced the Radio First Termer Multimedia CD that I gave away to free anybody who wanted it, it was still not really practical to transfer multi-megabyte files over the internet.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, now, so, alright, we've covered the freedom of information, so now we're talking about, you're talking about 1996.
Let me just go back a little bit about the freedom of information request. In detail, I finally made a decision. Okay, I'm gonna do it. I found a site that I've actually got linked to on the homepage where you could put together your own FOIA request. And I decided, okay, I'm willing to pay up to, I think it was $100. So I put that expressly in the letter. I'm willing to pay up to $100 in copying spaces. And I actually, as part of the FOIA request, made a copy of my tape and sent it along and say, I'm looking for more copies or information regarding this. So some second lieutenant or ensign, obviously be second lieutenant for the Air Force, would listen to this and hopefully get a flavor of what I was looking for.
Exactly.
And I eventually did get responses to the FOIA requests, and I put them verbatim onto the website.
Right.
They just came up zilch. And I didn't pursue the FOIA request any further, but I posted it on there to show, you know, look, I did, but unfortunately it looks like it's a dry well in terms of anything that the military might have kept regarding Radio First Turner.
Yeah, and I got news for you. You know, I mean, I still contend to this day that the person that recorded it is the guys that were in the relay station there in Phan Rang. Simply because, you know, as we talked about before, quality of the copies, you know, down the way and whatever. I mean, you had to have a really legitimately good copy to start with, because even, you know, when it got to down to the generation that you acquired, and you finally did the MP2s, I mean, the sampling and all the digitization and whatever, you still, you know, there still had to start with a decent copy somewhere in the immediate deal back in 1971, which obviously, you know, it had to be done during the 21 days that the show was in existence. You know, it's just real interesting when I stop and think about all the things, as you and I have talked about before, Will, that had to have happened for everything to fall into place. And as I've said before, I give you full credit, even though there were, you know, supporting cast that helped you get to a point to where you decided to put up the website. But I give you full credit in that, you know, it was your desire as a fan initially that was the original catalyst to get you to do it in the first place.
Yes, well, I'm certainly happy to have preserved your legacy from your very brave and brazen venture of 1971. To put together the show and to take the monumental risk that you did to put on the show. So I certainly commend you and thank you for producing what has given brought me a great deal of joy and excitement and ability to make friends by finding like-minded persons who and people who appreciate the humor of the Radio First Termer program that you did.
Well, I appreciate
and everybody wanting more. We want more, Dave Rabbit.
Yeah, well, we want to keep them with that same mentality. You know, David Zeiger, who you and I both know, he gives full credit to the fact that when they were doing the research for the movie Sir No Sir, that they came to your website. And that's where they nabbed or at least connected. I don't know how the internet thing works. You know me. Well, I don't give a shit about technology. Just show me a button to push and cut a microphone on and I'm in hog heaven. But, you know, on their side, if memory serves, when you click onto it, I think it doesn't it go directly back to the homepage?
Yes, I think they do have, Zeiger does have a link to the Radio First Termer homepage.
Yeah, and so when you click on the link there, it plays the link on the homepage somehow.
Well, I think they did snag the sound files.
Oh, okay.
And put them on their website. But yeah, I actually I remember getting contacted. This is after I came up to Winston-Salem. I did get an email from, obviously it was Zeiger. Inquiry was, we're doing a research, researching a film that's to be a documentary about the Vietnam War, and we came across your website and we wanted to know if you happened to know who Dave Rabbit was, and I think I communicated back through channels. No, I don't have no idea who Dave Rabbit was. If you happen to find out, let me know, because Mark Matthews and I, who became the designated Dave Hunter, and actually Mark is the source of the calling card for the Magic Fingers Lounge that I've got on the website.
And Mark's in Australia or someplace.
Yeah, he was over. That's the phenomenon of the internet, because he came across.
No, he's Philippines.
Yeah,
somewhere.
He's a stockbroker in Southeast Asia.
Yeah.
And he's had a number of jobs since I've over the time that I've been in contact with him. But he came across and scored on a number of calling cards from the Vietnam War, and one of them happened to be the one for the Magic Fingers Lounge. And I'm like, we were both like, hey, we recognize that. And he sent it to me, and of course I scanned it and put it on the webpage as a joke, as a gag sponsor of the website. And of course, not really sponsor, but, you know, it's a piece of memorabilia related to...
It's a piece of history.
Exactly. You know, keep away from the Korean at the front door from that bit that it's related to.
And, you know, the Magic Finger Lounge was a real place.
Yeah, I gathered that from the program. Although I never did find out what the Castle Club was.
The Castle Club was, it wasn't in Vietnam, it was Taiwan or someplace. It was another Southeast Asia country, but it was not Vietnam. Pete had either gone there on R&R, maybe it was Bangkok. I think maybe it was Bangkok, and he had gone over an R&R or whatever and had gone to the Castle Club, and that's where the Castle Club came in, because the Castle Club was not in Saigon.
Never knew that. I always assumed that it was in Saigon.
Nah.
And back before you made your appearance on the worldwide stage, when Mark Matthews and I were communicating with an individual who said, I happen to know who Dave Rabbit is, and it was this Methodist minister. But he said it was the NCO base, excuse me, the NCO lounge, Thompson Newt Air Force Base, and
right.
That's what he had said, and I had no reason to disbelieve him at the time. But
I think that it was Bar Pete found in Bangkok. But anyway, okay, so let's see. We're back up to the point now where you've got the site going and all this other stuff. And then, February 2006 comes along. And then tell me what your reaction was, or tell our listeners what the reaction was when you get this email from me. And I sent you a couple of photos and said, of course, we won't mention the name on there. But I sent you a couple of photos linking my real name as being a friend of Dave Rabbit, trying to kind of feel my way in, kind of making a connection. So what was your reaction when you got the initial photos? And I remember you were very excited when you emailed me back. But I'm just curious, what was your initial reaction when all of a sudden, after 11 years, of searching and whatever, you come up zero? Then all of a sudden you get this email.
I was absolutely amazed. I had I was totally amazed. I'm like, this is really, really Dave Rabbit. Finally. And when you called me on my cell phone and left me a voicemail message in the voice of Captain Pansy, I'm like, this is him. This is Dave Rabbit. We've Beacon of Hope has finally achieved its purpose of finding out who Dave Rabbit was. I was held out some hope that perhaps Dave Rabbit might appear on the scene someday. I thought it was a little bit more likely that I would come across somebody who would be able to say with some credibility, I know who Dave Rabbit is, and here is the proof. And actually, before you had, in the months before you came on the scene, I was toying with the idea of taking the information that had been produced by, I will call him pseudo Dave Rabbit, the Methodist minister, and trying to work that information into who was Dave Rabbit. Homepage just sort of is too expanded, but then you came on the scene, and of course that was all scrapped immediately. Mark Matthews was never convinced that guy was the real deal.
Yeah.
And of course, neither
was I when I found out that this guy is proclaiming that this Methodist minister is ashamed of everything he did. As you well know, there's not a damn thing I ever did over there that I was ever ashamed of in entertaining the troops and trying to give them a smile. But, I just think it's ironic. That guy, I tried Googling again, because when I initially Googled, I did find whatever that thing was that you were referring to, where the guy supposedly says, that this Methodist minister is Dave Rabbit and all this bullshit. They don't even exist anymore. So, boy, talk about scampering out of town when the real guy shows up.
You have a little bit more than just the mystery. You can prove that you did it. You are him. And you have the voice, which of course has evolved over the years since you've gotten out of the military, but still the core of that voice is there. Nobody else can do Captain Pansy. And as I've commented before, with regard to your voiceover on the Dave Rabbit's Vietnam, the Road to Radio First Termer, the inflections are the same. And I've listened to that recording of Radio First Termer over and over and over and over to the extent that I can recite verbatim the gags. You're him.
Yeah,
there's
well,
no doubt about it.
No, I know I'm definitely him, and you definitely know I'm him. So now, you know, the website really has evolved through a hell of a lot of hard work on your part. The only really thing I have really contributed to make it what it is today is I've given you some photographs, and of course you've gotten
and motivation and inspiration.
Yeah, motivation. But I mean, you know, I've never seen a more dedicated and motivated person than you, Will. So, I mean, you know, in our relationship, you know, and you know, folks say, you know, I tell people, you know, that we're best friends, and we are, and I tell people that you're my agent, and you know that you also, you know, are my personal attorney and that kind of stuff. And you know, they go, well, geez, you know, have you ever met? I said, no. In fact, now this is it's not an interesting story, but it's a story that I think needs to be told. It's a real short story. Somebody once said, you know, well, gee, you know, and of course everybody knows that I live in Dallas now, which is no big secret. Rots a ruck on finding me among a couple of million folks. Anyway, you know, people say, you know, well, gee, why didn't you just get an attorney, an agent that was in Dallas area? And I mean, there's a buttload of attorneys, and you know what they say about attorneys, you know, when you have 100 at the bottom of the ocean, you call it a good start.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, you know, I have more attorney friends than I care to have, and have used professionally at one time or the other. And they say, you know, well, why did you choose Will Snyder? I mean, hell, he's up in Timbuktu, Arkansas, wherever the hell he's living at. And I go, well, you know, there's a huge difference in just, getting somebody and saying, hey, my name is Dave Rabbit, and this is what I'm about. And using somebody and becoming friends with somebody that was a fan before Dave Rabbit ever came out of the rabbit hole. And that was the catalyst for cooking up with you, Will, which I've told you, but I'm restating it for fans around the world that may not know how we became initially hooked up professionally. And that was it, you know. I could not, and I told Will at the time, you know, when he hesitated and said, well, you know, wouldn't you want to find somebody, you know, in the Dallas area? And I said, no, I want somebody that had the motivation to do what they did in the website, and also to perpetuate not only Radio First Termer, but Dave Rabbit over the internet, to make it an internet phenomenon that it has become. You know, I want to do that simply because it's someone that I trust. Someone, you know, if someone has that dedication for 11 years and that love of a project for 11 years, I mean, Christ, I can't think of a better person that I would want to trust my franchise, if you will, too, and know that it's well taken care of, and that I know that I have someone I can trust and that I can go to that knows who I really am, that knows me, and can represent me to whatever offers that may come. And of course, as you well know, we've had several. So I mean, that's the reason why I selected Will, and that's strictly a pat on the back to Will, because he's just done a marvelous job. And I mean, I can't believe, Will, you know, we're in like in November, and I mean, you know, just a scant 3 months more, and you know, I've been out of the rabbit hole a year, and my Lord, look at all the stuff that you and I, all the roads that you and I have done since I first came out in February. It's been amazing. I mean, the David Zeiger thing, the tons of interviews that we've done, the improvements that we've made to the webpage is just, and I get constant comments, constant just kudos to you, Will, on how well the website really looks. You know, from people that had been there, for instance, a year ago, and now they see not only do we have the original Saigon show up in high quality as you could possibly get, high quality, you know, MP3s, you know, and then we have a lower resolution MP3 of the original Saigon show, and of course now we have the Iraq show, complete Iraq show up on the homepage. And, you know, there's other things on there. There's photographs that they can download, and there's all kinds of off-the-wall lunacy that we have there. And before I get go any further, for those of you that have not found Will's initial site, the official homepage of Dave Rabbit and Radio First Termer, it is www.radiofirsttermer.com, com, dot, V as in Victor, N as in Nancy. There's some asswipe that has it without the .vn that we're going to try to unpry from his clammy little greedy hands, since it's my franchise and my creation. We may just have to sue the little son of a bitch one way or the other. We'll figure that one out. But right now it's radiofirstturmer.com. V as in Victor, N as in Nancy. And take a look at the hard work that started out in 1995 by my friend, my agent, and my attorney, Will Snyder. It's been a great, it's been a great conversation, Will, and I really appreciate you taking the time. I know, Rebecca can be a handful, and your lovely wife, can also be a handful.
Yes.
And I've been hounding Will for several weeks now about, you know, Will, I want to do an interview with you. I want people to know what, you know, how it all came about and all this other stuff. And, you know, if I can, just get you, you know, for an hour, you know, we'll be in good shape. And of course, we've had several obstacles put in our path, by loved ones. And, but that's okay because, I got to do what I wanted to do, which was to make people aware of who Will Snyder is, how important Will Snyder was and is and shall always be to not only Radio First Termer, but to Dave Rabbit as an individual franchise. And, Will, I can't thank you enough, and I really appreciate you allowing me to invade your privacy and talk to you about some of the things that people constantly ask me, and better than the person that actually created the Internet phenomenon of Radio First Termer.
You're more than welcome, Dave, and the glory has always been here waiting for you to claim, and I am an honor and a privilege to have given you the ability to claim the glory and to reclaim the banner of Radio First Termer and to carry it on for posterity. So we thank you for putting together and doing Radio First Termer, because it's given me and others so much joy over the years, and has enabled us to make friends and entertain people for years. And I'm just so tickled to death that finally have discovered the impact and how many lives you've touched through your 21 days of pirate broadcasting from a brothel somewhere in Saigon, South Vietnam in 1971. Kudos to Dave Rabbit, and you go, Dave.
All right, brother. Thanks to me. And I want you to hang on a second, Will.
Sure.
And we're going to talk off the air. And that's it. That's the interview with Will Snyder, the mastermind behind the homepage of Radio First Termer, Dave Rabbit, and the franchise that started in 1971 and became history in 1995 when Will Snyder made the decision to create the official homepage at www.radiofirsttermer.com. V as in Victor, N as in Nancy.